It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. The
Score! This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I think somebody's got to take a victory lap when it comes to storytelling and reporting today. He's the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. He is at Pro Football Talk on X. And he is joining us via the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Mike Florio, how are you?
I'm doing great. Tell me more. What have I done now that turned out to be not complete and total bunk?
Well, first of all, Mike joins us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore if you want to see him. And secondly, The overwhelming confidence that people had about the fact that Matt LaFleur should be absolutely A-okay, 100% fine. Well, it's starting to percolate in Green Bay. Latest report from Adam Schefter saying that he and Ed Policy are still apart on a negotiation. And this has been ongoing for months. And the confidence that a lot of people had in his job security, I don't think is nearly as much this week as it was this time last week.
This all goes back to what Ed Policy said in June. Two things. Number one, there wouldn't be an extension for Matt LaFleur before the end of the 2025 season. Number two, Ed Policy isn't a fan of lame duck arrangements where a coach is in the last year of his deal, which is what Matt LaFleur would be for 2026. So once they leaked that they will discuss an extension with Matt LaFleur on the heels of the debacle on Saturday night, of which you all are well familiar, that doesn't mean they're going to get a deal done. The Packers may have seen this as an opportunity to lowball Matt LaFleur. What better time to get him to agree to a deal that's favorable to the team than on the immediate heels of that 21-3 collapse? And with LaFleur saying both Saturday night and Sunday, Green Bay's the best job and this is where I want to be. You don't have a lot of leverage when it's time to negotiate. His leverage is to say, I'm not going to sign a contract. I'm just going to continue to coach. And you don't like lame duck coaches, well, you're going to have to deal with it. So that's where we are. And I made the point the other day, until the deal's done, there's no deal. And nothing stops the Packers from issuing a statement whenever they want that Matt LaFleur will be the coach of the team in 2026. Until they do that, there's a chance he won't be. And one last twist, they may be waiting for one of these other teams to call them up and say, looks like you got an issue with Matt LaFleur. What would you want if we would essentially trade for Matt LaFleur? That's on the table as well. Until a deal is done and until they announce he's going to be back for 2026, we can't rule out anything else.
Speaking of that, now Mike Tomlin is out, stepping down. And he, a guy that if you want him, you would have to trade for him because he's still under contract and he didn't get fired. He resigned. How does this change, if anything, what this carousel looks like? And when was the last time we had, or have we ever had a coaching carousel quite like this?
I don't think we've had one quite like this, especially when you throw in the presence of John Harbaugh, who has more leverage, as one owner told me over the weekend, than any coaching candidate has had in decades. Everyone wants him. He's in a position where he can dictate terms and he can just wait for someone to eventually make him an offer that he won't be able to refuse. It reminds me in some ways of the Deshaun Watson trade from 4 years ago, where it was set up perfectly to have four teams competing for Watson, the Browns, Panthers, Falcons, Saints. Watson initially said to the Browns, I'm not interested in playing for your team. So they took a step back. They came up with a massive offer and he took it. And of course, it all worked out perfectly well for the Browns after that. So Harbaugh is in a position where he really can drive this thing the way he wants. The Giants are the team that many inside the league think he will land with, but you never know when one of these other teams, one of these other owners is going to say, I want Harbaugh and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get him. So you throw that on top of nine openings, more than 25% of the league, nearly 30% of the league. Think of it this way. There's 32 teams. Only 23 NFL teams currently have head coaches. That's how crazy it is this time around.
It absolutely is. And we were talking in our meeting, Mike, about the comments that Steve Bisciotti made and how self-aware and normal sounding they were when it came to not only his ownership of the Ravens and how he sees that playing out ultimately as he gets older, but the news about Harbaugh being available, the news about Mike Tomlin being available, that broke while he was speaking. Did you catch wind of any of that?
Oh, absolutely. He drops the S-bomb. We actually played the clip on our show today without the word being deleted, which was very refreshing to me because every once in a while, Sims and I will let one fly live. So why not let it fly when it's in something that someone said? It was a great reaction. And hey, there would surely be some Ravens fans that would love to see Mike Tomlin get to Baltimore. But remember this, the Steelers have rights to Mike Tomlin. Anyone that would want to hire him has to deal with the Steelers. And to the extent that teams are contacting Tomlin, they're technically tampering. They need to have permission from the Steelers first. The Dolphins found that out the hard way 4 years ago when they got whacked for tampering with Tom Brady and Sean Payton. They had a plan where Brady was going to go work for the Dolphins in the front office. They were going to hire Sean Payton. Sean Payton was on board with it. Brady was going to decide during the offseason program he wants to keep playing. He would have played for the Dolphins. That all got blown up. And the Dolphins lost a first-round pick. There was $1.5 million fine. Stephen Ross was suspended. So be careful. If you're a team looking for a coach and you're contacting Mike Tomlin, you could find yourself on the wrong side of a tampering charge.
Mike Florio joins us as he does each and every week here on Raheemy Harrison Grody, the editor-in-chief and creator of Pro Football Talk. All right, so I'm trying to wrap my head around all these things going. Meanwhile, there is still football being played. And we started this by talking about Matt LaFleur. How much have you been following this ever-growing beef between Matt LaFleur and Ben Johnson, and do you think it has real legs as far as other people being involved trying to have Matt LaFleur's back?
I remember when things like this would happen 20 years ago, some of the old-school football people would express dismay. What has our game become? It's like pro wrestling. Well, guess what? That's the reason pro wrestling's successful. You have drama, and in pro wrestling, it's scripted. In the NFL, it just kind of happens. So I love it when someone just says what they believe and it creates this soundbite and it has these ripple effects. I would expect that Matt LaFleur is doing everything he can to help his brother Mike this week as the Rams get ready to come face the Bears. I mean, this is something that isn't going to go away. And as a fan of just overall compelling storylines, I hope Matt LaFleur stays with the Packers for as long as Ben Johnson is with the Bears. I can't get enough of that. So, yeah, it has ripple effects. And I know LaFleur's perspective on the whole thing is, what the hell's going on here? What have I ever done to this guy? I don't even know him. It's just great how this has morphed into a thing.
Well, that said, how much we heard Stephen A. Smith talk about this on ESPN, that it's those close to LaFleur now who are not a fan of his. You know, we mentioned Sean McVay, for example, with the Rams game coming up. LaFleur was on his staff. We're just wondering who else might take offense to what this is.
Well, look, there's this. And Ben Johnson is really taking a calculated risk here because the way the NFL works, there's only 32 teams, as we know, for now. It could change. But for now, there's 32. And everyone is interconnected. And every coach that's currently with a team is potentially going to be looking for a job someday. Your network of friends, colleagues, associates, connections is one of your most important assets because when you end up out on your ear, as 8 coaches found out this year, plus the one who walked away, you're going to be tapping into that network when it's time to plot your next move. Ben Johnson doesn't care. I love the confidence that is embedded within his attitude. He's willing to act like a fan. You know, that's one of the things that drives fans crazy. Coaches and players don't behave the way fans do. They don't think the way fans do. Because for the coach, I'm going to be with this team 1 year, that team the next year, the other team the year after that. I become a head coach. It's not going to be for the rest of my life. I'll be working for this team next. I need my network more than I need my current colors. Ben Johnson has put his current colors above any of that stuff. And it could come back to bite him, but I hope Bears fans understand how rare that is because most coaches are very concerned about preserving their friends, their associates, and not burning bridges because you never know when you're going to need to cross over it to get yourself a job.
Okay, Mike, you mentioned the 9 different head coaching vacancies. I'm trying to figure out who goes where, who's going to be left in this game of musical chairs. It seems like almost like dominoes, though. The first one has to fall. Is John Harbaugh that first domino, and then all of a sudden things fall into place? How do you see this kind of working out around the league?
As to the teams that want John Harbaugh and that believe they have a realistic shot to get him, he's the first domino. There may be teams that know we have no chance, we're not willing to pay him what he wants, or maybe we have done our homework and we've decided that we just don't want him. Those teams can go after whoever their top choice may be. There's so many candidates. The supply of potential head coaching candidates always surpasses the demand, even in a year when there's 9 jobs available. But for now, it's Harbaugh. Tomlin has made it clear, reportedly, that he's not going to coach in 2026. I still don't rule out someone making him an offer that he just cannot say no to. But Harbaugh is the primary logjam, and then other candidates will scatter accordingly. And then you're going to have guys that need to put their staffs together. There's going to be a land rush for the assistant coaches to line them up. It really is going to be a crazy several weeks. But Harbaugh is the first big name that we're going to be watching. I would expect Harbaugh takes a job before any of the other jobs are filled, but I wouldn't rule out one of the jobs that Harbaugh doesn't want, pulling the trigger before Harbaugh takes a job.
We're talking to Mike Florio, the creator, editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk, here on Raheem Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. And Mike, another question for you. This one is Bears adjacent. Is the fate of Ian Cunningham, who has interviewed in many GM cycles, there's a lot of thought that he might end up going to the Falcons. If he's acquired as a GM, is attached to compensatory pick. So do you know anything about the concept of, they're saying that if he goes to the Falcons, that it would be a theoretical linear move because it has to be, I guess, the primary person in charge of football. So that compensation wouldn't be attached. Like, it's worth a revisit of the rules. And I figured you might be more familiar with it for our listeners.
I saw the report over the weekend. I think it was from someone with the Sun-Times that there wouldn't be compensatory picks because it's not regarded as a true GM job because Matt Ryan, the new president of football operations, has control over the team, which is significant for a more important reason. It reminds me of the dilemma Kyle Shanahan faced when he became the 49ers coach 9 years ago and he had the keys to the roster and the draft. When you can't offer someone who is currently under contract with another team a true GM job, if it's just GM light, if it's just the title but not the power, the team can say no. Now, if the contract is expiring, that's a different issue. But teams can't block a true promotion to GM. They can block a lateral move. That complicates things for Matt Ryan as he looks for a GM. It's one of the reasons why Kyle Shanahan ended up hiring John Lynch. He was completely unattached. The Falcons may have to ultimately hire someone who is currently disconnected from any team because it would be a lateral move. It wouldn't be the kind of thing that the team would be unable to say no to. So I think that wrinkle is more important than the compensatory draft picks. The idea that the Bears could just say, you can't talk to him. He's not going to be the GM. He's not going to have control over the roster. We can block this move.
I think given, though, that Ryan Poles helped Matt Ryan in this process, I don't necessarily know that the talking would be an issue. I think it's more about just the, I guess officially, you know, that would be said. But another question I have regarding this is, then who would they get? You know, you've talked a lot about candidates for GM positions that you think may deserve a second chance. They don't get them. You know, is there somebody on your mind who you think might be a better fit with that team now?
Well, look, Matt Ryan is going to be the guy who calls the shots here, and he has no experience running a football team. And we need to be fair. I've criticized others in the past. It worked out for John Elway in Denver. He had no experience as an NFL executive or scout or anything. He was a player, a great player for a long time. He had confidence in his ability to scout because he learned it from his father. It worked out in large part because he won the Peyton Manning sweepstakes 14 years ago. But that's the real question. What is Matt Ryan looking for? And if he hears no, no, no from the teams that have current executives that can be blocked, he's going to have to find somebody, whether it is one of the GMs out there that for whatever reason, and coaches get recycled, GMs generally do not. Some do, but usually you get one shot as a GM. So that's going to be the challenge. And there's plenty of people in broadcasting who aspire to be general managers. We hear about that all the time. Lewis Riddick has been trying to angle for a GM job forever. He'd be a guy who would obviously be in line for an interview because no one could say no to the Falcons making him the GM, even if he wouldn't truly be the GM of the Falcons.
Okay, news out of Philadelphia, not surprising. Kevin Petullo out as offensive coordinator after they failed to get back to the Super Bowl. I'm so curious as to your thoughts about how we're doing this from a building a team with a head coach who's not an offensive-minded head coach, more of a CEO type like what you might see in college, and knowing that if your guy's good, he's going to leave, and that's resulted in Jalen Hurts having a different play caller for as long as I can remember each and every season. What do you think about the next guy that they hire for that job and whether or not head coaches should be the offensive mind because of the way the league is going?
It's an amazing roller coaster that the Eagles have been on. Shane Steichen, after the 2022 season, Eagles go to the Super Bowl. He gets the head coaching job in Indianapolis. 23, Brian Johnson, the guy that took his place, that season was a disaster. He gets fired, and Nick Sirianni had to have a good plan for 24, or he would have been in trouble. Enter Kellen Moore. Great job, win a Super Bowl. Kellen Moore is the head coach of the Saints. Now 1 year with Kevin Petullo, it's a disaster. And Sirianni has been able somehow, because he was an offensive coordinator, he's somehow been able to avoid blame for the performance of the offense, even though offense is his side of the ball. I think this next hire for him is critical. And the problem is, if he does it right, if he hits a home run, he's going to be right back in this spot next year because that guy's going to be a head coach in the 2027 cycle. It's just a weird spot that the Eagles are in. And the deeper problem there, they need to find a way to get more out of Jalen Hurts. The reports have begun to become more prevalent. It started with Derek Gunn, who's been covering the Eagles forever. It happened during the season. The idea that Jalen Hurts is frustrating coaches and players because he does his own thing when it's time to go run the plays that are called. And he's got a lot of power over the team because of his contract structure. They are stuck with him. The cap hit would be astronomical if they would trade him, or they wouldn't release him. But if they would release him, they would have to deal with a huge cap charge because of the way they layer the payments to minimize the current cap charges. They need to find a way to get through to him. And, you know, one of the things Chris Sims and I were talking about the other day, when the Patriots were beginning to wonder whether or not Tom Brady had lost his magic after 2011, 2012, 2013, what did they do? They used a second-round pick on Jimmy Garoppolo. That was a shot across the bow. That was also a vitamin B12 shot for Tom Brady, and it sparked the second half of the Patriots dynasty. The Eagles may just need to go out and use a fairly high draft pick on a quarterback and hope that gets Jalen Hurts to do what they need him to do. They failed to find the right common ground with Hurts, and that has dragged down the offense. And the sooner they admit their deeper problems and address them, the sooner they'll be in a situation where they don't have this offense that just disappears for at least half of a game, if not more.
All excellent points, Mike. And to us, you deserve a victory lap. So if you're able to take it, I think you should take it.
Before lunch.
I am very aware, though, that for every one you get right, there's a chance there's going to be one you get wrong. So I try not to take victory laps. I'll take it as money in the bank for the next time I step in something while taking the victory lap that I'd have to scrape off of my shoe. So I'll stick with, as Charles Barkley says, as long as the paycheck shows up on the 15th and the 30th, that's all I need.
Shrewd move, counsel. Mike Florio, thanks as always for taking the time.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much. See you. Have a good week.
That's Mike Florio. I actually think the opposite. All of us get stuff wrong. Virtually all the time.
I love a good 50-50
ball. When you're right,
ball.
you might want to say, I got this one.
Yeah.
Doesn't
it depends on how much you're wrong, though. Because
fair enough.
People will point out, yeah, but you're wrong on this, that, the other.
But you have heard of me.
Fifth and the third,
or
yes.
They'll just make it up, too, which is a thing now.
That's a thing.
The makeup is a thing. Coming up next, you're on Raheemi Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. Ben Johnson just spoke at Halas Hall ahead of this all-important divisional round game. So we are going to bring it back to you. Let's hear from the head coach today. Next.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Rahimi, Harris, and Grody on 670 The Score. Ben Johnson spoke earlier at Halas Hall today, so we're going to take a listen and react.
All right. Looking forward to getting the guys back in today and get rolling on this this opponent. The more tape you watch, the more respect you have for them. They've had a incredible season so far, and you know, they're really sound, they're really talented, really well coached across the board. So we'll have our work cut out for us, but challenge we'll look forward to. So I'll go ahead and open it up from there.
You guys mentioned I think maybe as far back as training camp that there was a lot of Matthew Stafford that you wanted Caleb to watch and emulate. What specifically about that, and how have you seen that go?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he's fundamentally sound, and so when you talk about the footwork, I think it starts there with him. But then as you talk about an experienced player that sees the field really well, he understands defenses, he knows how to manipulate defenses. He's got a great feel for the game, and that translates to everything he does every single week. They're very much a premier play operation. You know, they get into really good football plays against whatever defense that you're into, and that's a credit to the head coach and play caller, obviously, but also Matthew has a lot to do with that, because he's got complete control of everything that's going on. And so it's no wonder that they're scoring so many points that they are right now.
When you want a young player to watch film of a veteran, do you connect the two at all, or did you put Matt in touch with Caleb?
Nothing like that. You know, but certainly admire Matthew from afar, and knowing him for a couple seasons firsthand, I've got a tremendous amount of respect for him.
Ben, how would you evaluate the state of your run game the last 3 weeks, especially?
Yeah, it feels like it's dipped a little bit. Not something that we certainly want. Certainly late in the season, we wanted that to pick up. Playoffs, weather games like this, you certainly want to be able to lean on your run game. So those are some elements we're looking at. What can we do to help ignite that? Is both efficient runs to stay on track and ahead of the chains, and also explosive runs as well. Where can we find a few of those? I'll say this: we got a really tough opponent in that regard. I think they do a really good job. I think the front is their strength. These guys at the line of scrimmage are really good football players. I think they shed blocks at an elite level. I think they are relentless. I think they're violent, really across the board. So I have a lot of respect for them, and we're going to have to be on our A game to be able to run it on this crew.
What are the challenges their front seven present in terms of pressure, quarterback?
Yeah, I think that's the other thing that jumps off the tape, is being able to maintain the depth and the width of the pocket is going to be quite a challenge as well. You know, Verse is one of the more violent edge players I've seen on tape so far this year. He does a great job turning speed into power. He'll take a tackle, go right down the middle of him, and take him right onto the lap of the quarterback. The interior, they are, like I said, relentless. I think that's almost not only talented, but just the fact that they do it play in and play out, and they don't take any plays off, that makes it very difficult, because you got to bring it every single snap. Can't have any lapses up front. Or else they'll make you pay, you know, whether it's Turner or Fisk at the three technique. You know, Puna Ford's playing high-level football, a little bit more in the running game than the passing game, but yet he's a problem for you, you know. And so, you know, I can't say enough good things about the level with which they're playing up front right now.
And Sean McVay was talking about what he studied from your offense. What have you studied from him? What have you gleaned from his offense?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think my history has been obviously with Jared Goff, and Jared started with Sean, and so there was a lot of comfort that Jared had from his time with Sean that we looked to, you know, accentuate there in Detroit. And so that was a one of the pillars of our playbook were some of those concepts from LA, and also augmenting it with some of the stuff that I had been around, that Coach Campbell had been around, and the rest of the offensive staff. And so it's a marriage of a bunch of stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I've watched a ton of LA tape over the years, obviously when Jared was there, and then that's continued since Matthew's been there as well.
And ahead of the draft a couple of years ago, did you have any interaction with or do much homework on Nacua?
No. He was I wasn't coaching receivers at the time, and so it wasn't on my radar.
When you see what he's become, how do you describe that makes him such a problem?
Yeah, well, I think you look at a guy like that, I think it starts with this guy is a football player. Take position out of it, and he clearly loves the game. He clearly is all about ball. He reminds me a lot of St. Brown, you know, another guy that I felt very similar about, because he's not just excellent at catching the football and route running, but he does everything. He's willing to put his nose in there and get his hands dirty in the running game. The versatility with which he has, I mean, he's in the box inserting through the B and C gaps, not only to block, but to run routes. I mean, physical player, tough player, and you can tell a really dependable player as well.
Stafford's numbers against the blitz are pretty good this year. How do you sort of pick your spots?
Yeah, I think his numbers versus everything's pretty good this year. You know, he's playing at MVP level, and you know, I think that's going to be our challenge, right? I mean, we got to have guys step up here this week, both up front and on the back end, to make things as difficult as we possibly can for him. And so, whether that's bring pressure, whether that's play coverage, and depend on our front four to get after him. You know, it's one of those things where it's going to take everybody. It's going to take our defense playing good football for 60 minutes, and it's going to take our offense being able to keep up with an offense of this caliber as well.
Is there anything you take away? I mean, they got into a shootout last week, or at least like a late game rally where they had to fight off the Panthers. I know you guys have done this now 7 different times this season. Is there any parallels between how they've had to win some of these tight games, or anything that you use as far as game planning, like to what you guys have done too?
Yeah, I don't know about that necessarily. I think we're more focused on ourselves in terms of, we don't want to put ourselves in a hole against a team like this, like we've done a number of times this year. You know, I think we need to, you know, we talk about playing a complete game on offense. Like, this is the week that needs to happen for us to be able to beat this team.
When you gave Montez the ball, you said you just kind of felt him in the game. Going back and watching the film, what did you like about what he was able to
yeah,
do?
Yeah, well, I think he's a guy that we count on. And I know the sack numbers is what everybody looks at when it comes to edge rushers. And he's at double digits. He's played really good football in that regard. But as I've told him, as the year's gone along, it's, for me, it's not just the sacks. It's also the pressures and the quarterback hits. And so when you're watching from the sideline and you're feeling him affecting the quarterback a different type of way, I do think that's really important. So he stepped up. I felt like that since the bye week. He's playing really good in the running game. That gets overlooked. But also in the passing game, I felt him get after the quarterback a little bit more. So when you combine that with a guy like Booker on the other side, who I think continues to ascend, you know, I think it gives us a pretty good chance.
Ben, you guys have had a lot of these emotional wins. Did you sense anything different from the group because it happened in the playoffs? And for a lot of them, that was a first.
Yeah, well, I think they've handled it really well. And I think we're going to do a good job here shifting the focus, starting our work week just like we've been doing each and every week. And that's really what it comes down to, is you can't let a win or a loss linger for too long. And that's our job as coaches, to make sure we have the right mindset going into the week. And I keep saying it every week, it feels like, but our veteran leadership, I mean, they're phenomenal. I don't know if I've been around it quite at this level before. Just week in and week out, you know that they have a good pulse for the locker room, and their message is going to be really what our team needs to hear.
The topic of veteran leadership, how have you felt Grady this year and even recently in that regard?
Yeah, well, I think he is wired the way we want our entire team wired. I felt that from his first press conference here all the way up until now. And, you know, we hit that little hiatus, if you will, early in the season where he's working through his injury. And so his impact probably isn't quite as pronounced as it was in the off season or where it is now. Like, I feel it. These young players are coming along. They're developing. And I think his playoff experience and really these big games that he's been a part of throughout his career, I do think that that translates and really hits home with a lot of our guys.
And what's it like coaching Caleb in big moments? And what have you learned about his poise?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot you need to say to him on the sideline. You know, we just make sure we're on the same page in terms of what the situation is and what we need to accomplish and how quickly we need to accomplish it. But beyond that, he doesn't, it's not like he needs a pep talk or a rah-rah or anything like that. He's ready to go. And been saying it all along. He rises to the occasion time and time again. It's really impressive to see a young player like this be so clutch.
That was Ben Johnson speaking today at Hallis Hall. We did edit out a couple questions for the sake of time. And this is Raheem Harrison-Grody on 670 The Score. So what sticks out to me is the way he talked about building his playbook, or at least his plays for Jared Goff, off of a lot of Sean McVay's concepts, which makes sense when you watched the Detroit Lions offense with Jared Goff. So, like I said, I feel like these two head coaches and their schemes echo each other, and it would make sense as to why, knowing how those plays worked for his team and thusly his quarterback in Detroit, he would have so much respect for Sean McVay and how he puts a playbook together. A
couple of things that stuck out to me. First of all, the way he talked about Puka Nacua and how he reminds him of Amon-Ra St. Brown, because he is a football player above all else. Yes, he's good at obviously catching the football and running routes. But the other thing that is concerning is just kind of, hey, we're going to depend on our front four to get to the quarterback, because that's been a plan that's worked not enough of the time. And I just wonder when Dennis Allen steps up to the podium tomorrow how he's going to talk about the need to affect the quarterback.
I think that that's code for him saying we're not going to be able to blitz a lot. Talk about a team who will pick apart and find the slightest opening or take advantage of man coverage. It's these guys. So that's my concern. You cannot afford to have pressure that doesn't work up front, because you can't lose the bodies at the second and third levels of the defense.
And then conversely, the only other thing that really jumped out is how he talked about the front four for the Rams and how good they are, and it's going to be difficult, in his words, to run the football. That is not a vote of confidence you want to hear going into a game like this on Sunday night.
If you see the way the Bears have run the ball in the last, I'd say, four or five games, then that probably continues a trend on Sunday that we've seen. Opponents are learning how to defend the Bears' run schemes better. We'll talk to Olin Krutz about that. I think he'll be really good to discuss that with at 125. But that's something that your eyes are not deceiving you. They're not running the ball as effectively as they were. And individual matchups, unfortunately, the better teams you play, that's going to be a big part of it. Coming up next here on Raheem Harrison-Grody on 670 The Score, we have to check in with our friend Courtney Turner, the host of Holding Court podcast. You know her as Justin Turner's wife, and she's a Bears meatball. So she decided to go to the game, even though the fam had already moved back to the West Coast. So we'll get her report, and then also apparently an interesting conversation between her and Justin at halftime next.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
With the house divided and
a big week,
we have Bears and Dolphins stuff all over the house, and she's ran a fantasy football league for like 15 years now. She loves it. She's so into it. And if I told you the name of her fantasy football league, I think that number would go up.
Go ahead, give it to us. I got more Bears here in my bag. I can give some more out.
The name of her fantasy football league for as long as I've been in it is Put Your Ditka in My Bucket.
That is Justin Turner talking about his wife. She grew up a Bears fan. She's from the region. Courtney Turner, nice enough to join us on our Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, circalasvegas.com. Court with a K is who she is on Instagram, and she's the host of the Holding Court podcast and co-founder with Justin Turner of the Justin Turner Foundation. Courtney asked the people on Instagram if she should go to the game. Courtney, thanks for joining us. You ended up going to the game.
I ended up going to the game. It was very last minute, and I was terrible with planning the whole thing, but obviously it worked out pretty good for me.
You can also see Courtney on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. And where are you? This is a beautiful backdrop that you have.
I actually, as I was walking over to set up the camera, I realized that when I joined the show last time, it was our wedding anniversary. And now we're on our belated wedding anniversary trip in Sonoma, in wine country. So you guys keep really stalking us on our anniversary celebration. So thank you for that.
Well, first of all, shout out to knowing that Sonoma is greater than Napa Valley. As someone who lived in Sacramento, I can attest to you making the right selection there, whether it was the first time or this recent trip that has cemented that for you. Courtney, you, when I say impromptu, that probably doesn't describe best how you decided to make this trip. Take us through the process of, hey, I'm going to go to the Bears game, but I'm not in Chicago.
Yeah, so I was in Los Angeles and felt like I just couldn't miss the game. I feel like if maybe it was someone other than the Packers, I might have stayed home, but I felt like I couldn't miss that rivalry in the wild card. So I'm one of those people that kind of says yes and decides to go and then figures out the details later. And yeah, I booked a one-way flight to Chicago. I was texting with my friend who has season tickets, kind of asking her, okay, where should I stay? And she gave me the best hotel that would let me walk to the game. So I'm on the flight with the worst Wi-Fi, trying to book hotel, finding tickets online. And then my last stop was my flight home. But yeah, it was definitely worth all the chaos, but it's kind of on brand for me, so it wasn't that surprising if you know me.
Well, lifelong Bears fan, of course, the chance for seeing the first playoff win in 15 years in person, what were your emotions like just getting ready for the playoff game?
It was wild. I actually walking over and seeing Soldier Field, obviously I've seen it a million times, but I will admit I got kind of emotional seeing it and just seeing everyone walking there, knowing how much that game meant to all the fans. And I was so glad I made the choice. You can ask Justin some of my text in the first and the second quarter. He threatens to like release my text thread and tell everyone what I was actually saying when we were losing some hope there. But it was wild. It was, I think it's still very surreal. And I feel like a lot of fans will agree we're still in shock and still processing it because it just, yeah, it was unreal to be there and see it in person.
Courtney, be honest with me. Was there a point where there was 21-3 or 21-6 after three quarters? Was there a point where you're like, I made the wrong decision to make this trip for this?
Oh, 100%. But I will say it just, I don't know. I mean, we've been through it as Bears fans. So one of those things of, okay, we have to go through all the emotions, but that's why Justin said he's going to release my texts and show everyone my doubt that I had up for a little bit there. And he said, if anyone can come back, it's the Bears. And he will remind me of that text for the rest of my life. But yeah, I don't know. But then we were all in it together. And even when everyone was kind of down and all that, it was kind of like just that shared, you know, Bears fan misery that we know so well. But I don't know. I don't think I would have regretted the trip either way, but I definitely am glad I was there now for sure.
So wait a second. Justin's the one like keeping the faith. He's the one giving you the pump up speech when the team is down at the half.
Does that even surprise you? That's always him. I feel like I am the pessimist. I'm the glass half full, and he's always there to kind of remind me that things can turn around. I mean, we've seen it. It's one of those things where they've done it all season, but you wonder if they're going to stop doing it. And I guess they're not going to stop doing it. That's just the way it is. Because he was even saying, okay, in the Niners game, they finally, you know, it was the most offensive game back and forth. And then they didn't even win that game. So he's like, maybe they shouldn't change anything. Maybe they just need to get going in the second half and in the fourth quarter.
So what was the point in the game where you went from this stinks to, wait, we can win this game? Because we've all had our like individual moment. We're like, wait a minute. Yeah. The Bears can win this.
I don't, yeah. Somewhere towards the end of the, but then I am so, I don't know. I try to not let myself get too high or too low because I know heartbreak very well in sports. So I don't know. We all started to believe in my section of strangers that I met and was lovingly hugging at the end of the game. But yeah, I would say it probably wasn't until the fourth quarter where I was thinking, okay, this could actually happen. And I actually think after the game and then you watch the last play and you're thinking, okay, is there going to be a flag? Is there going to be something? And just shock and disbelief. I think we just all could not believe it.
As you've been to Soldier Field a time or two, we're talking to Courtney Turner. Her husband is Justin Turner. She hosts the Holding Court podcast. And Courtney, I think being a fan as long as you have been, going to games previously, have you ever heard Soldier Field in person or even on TV be as loud as it was in those final minutes of the game?
No, it was insane. And it's one of those where you are screaming so loud. And it's like I was filming some little moments to capture it. And you don't even remember what you were yelling or what you were doing. And like I said, this lady behind me just gave me this big bear hug. And we're screaming and everyone's high-fiving. And it was just, there's nothing like that roar of a crowd in a place like Soldier Field when you know that they're about to, like, it was just, I can't even describe it. I'm so glad I was there, and there's nothing like it.
I'm glad you're back with us, Courtney, because drama has become a thing for you with football tied together, and I know this extends beyond Soldier Field. Do you have an update on your fantasy football season and the drama that was taking place, and how did you finish that fantasy football season?
Yeah, so I ended up not making the playoffs for the first, I didn't know what to do with myself the last couple of weeks because I didn't have a horse in the race. So in my wife's league, there was a husband that started running a team and he ended up being the one that took me out and I missed playoffs. So,
how'd you know it was him and not her?
Well, without giving it away, she was in active labor and was like playing the waiver wire. So I just knew that was I knew it was suspicious. I called it out in the chat and she said he has a problem and fully admitted it. And I was shocked.
Wait a minute.
He said he had a problem? Well, she's in labor.
Some husbands cannot keep their hands and their moves off of their wives' fantasy team. And they all have leagues of their own. Literally, our league name is a league of their own. We don't need the guys in this one. We got it. And they can't, I don't know. It was frustrating. So we gotta go over the rules, I guess, next year.
What was the resolution to that?
Or did you just take your L? Did he get to see the baby?
Yeah, like I have so many questions.
They both ended up getting third. So it wasn't really that, I mean, it still bothered me because, you know, like, come on. But I don't know. I feel like I was more mad about it than I thought the other wives would be in the chat. So I had to kind of pull myself back a little bit, but
you had to dial it down.
Yeah, because I was frustrated. I think it was because it was against me. Maybe if it happened to someone else and the matchup was with them, they would have got upset. But yeah, I was not happy.
Active labor. That's a new one.
Well, I'm sorry that you did not finish as well in your fantasy football league, although you have the all-time team league names. There's no doubt about that, thanks to Justin letting us know. And since Justin was so supportive of the Bears, is there any chance he's closer to being a Bears fan now as opposed to being a Dolphins fan?
No, I think he's always going to ride with the Dolphins, but he is enjoying this season for sure. But a lot of my friends are. It's funny, their team are either not in the playoffs or they've been eliminating the playoffs, and I get so many texts of, okay, I'm rooting for the Bears from here on out. So maybe they're America's team right now instead of the Cowboys.
I don't think the Cowboys have been America's team for a long time, and I'm from Dallas.
Since the 90s, but it's okay.
Exactly.
They still use it in marketing, so.
Absolutely. And Courtney, since you went to the game, are you part of the good luck? Are you going to the game again?
I know someone, I won't know until probably Saturday night if I'm going, but someone said, you don't want to find out if you're the good luck or not. You don't want to mess with this, so.
Yes. We'll see you Sunday night.
It's funny. My flight there, I was the only person in my Bears hat, and this flight will be very different with Rams going with me. So,
you're based out of Southern California. And what's the update on Justin? Of course, we are a friend of the show now, so we have to look out for him as well.
Yeah, he's doing well. I think guys are starting to sign. So we're hoping that, you know, we get some news pretty soon. We get to give it another go this year.
Well, that's exciting for sure. Courtney Turner, live from Sonoma. If you want to check out her podcast, it is called Holding Court. She is Court with a K on Instagram, friend of the show. And I'm glad you went to the game.
Thanks for sharing with us, too. We appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
That's Courtney Turner. You can check out her podcast. And I hope she has a good rest of her anniversary trip. What are we messing up next? Do we call in a kid's birthday? Like, what do we do next?
This is hilarious. I'm sorry. I can't get over the act of labor. And like, labor, how are you making these moves? Can't get over that.
And you're very active in your fantasy football leagues. That's what cracks me up, is it takes one to know one.
Yeah, I understand the... Can you more of those waiver moves?
And then Studs was in five, but I think his league number has lowered now. Are you surprised, Adam Studzinski? You're not surprised at all. Coming up next, it's time for Five on It. Five pressing questions that we have on this Wednesday on Raheemy Harris and Grody.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.